Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Emma, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, Managing the Side Effects of Immunotherapy. And this is part two of New Trends in Immunotherapy. And today's program is supported by Bristol-Myers Squibb, the Anna Fuller Fund, and a grant from Genentech, and I really want to thank them for their support of the program today. Now, we have a lot of you on the program today. We have over 315 participants, so there are a lot of you on the call, and you come from all of the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities, and we also have international participants from Australia, Canada, Colombia, Egypt, Iran, Morocco, Nepal, Pakistan, and the United Kingdom. So this is truly a global call as well. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Balazs Halmos. And Dr. Halmos is Director of Thoracic Oncology, Director of Clinical Cancer Genomics, Montefiore Medical Center. And Dr. Halmos will be addressing how the side effects of immunotherapy differ from chemotherapy side effects, review of potential side effects with guidelines for follow-up care, and tips to cope with flu-like symptoms, including fever. It's now my pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Halmos.
Thank you so much for the introduction, Karen. It's truly a great pleasure to be here with all of you today. Just to provide a bit of a backdrop, let me tell you about immunotherapy, also more technically called checkpoint inhibitors, as we will cover in today's discussion. Immunotherapy is a new and very exciting way to treat multiple cancer types in a more effective and better tolerated way than many of our traditional cancer treatments, such as chemotherapy. Immune therapies have, in fact, completely transformed the treatment landscape and the management of both non-small and small cell lung cancer. We oncologists use them very frequently alone or in combination for patients with advanced stages of the disease, and more recently also following surgery or chemotherapy and radiation in patients with earlier stages of the disease. Lastly, one of the most exciting new avenues is to use immunotherapy with chemotherapy potentially prior to surgery to shrink or potentially eliminate the cancer by the time of surgery, leading to improved treatment outcomes for many patients with surgically resectable lung cancer. In principle, immunotherapy breaks down some checkpoints that slow down the full activation of our immune system to attack foreign appearing cancer cells. As the same checkpoints are used to protect ourselves from overactivation of our immune system, turning against our own cells and organs, something we call autoimmunity, most of the side effects of immunotherapy are indeed immune-mediated and resemble autoimmune processes, leading to inflammation in different parts of the body. To break it down into more practical examples, while chemotherapy indistinctly kills dividing cell types, leading to low blood counts, risk of infection, hair loss, nausea, and vomiting, immunotherapy will not have any of these side effects. In fact, the most common scenario in patients on immunotherapy is that of no side effects. And generally, the quality of life is better than on typical chemotherapies. I need to mention, though, that some patients will need a combination of both chemo and immunotherapies, and also at times we need to use two immunotherapies at the same time. In these cases, side effects, of course, are going to be more significant. So let's now hone down into single-agent immunotherapy. These agents currently are given every few to several weeks through an IV, and generally there are no immediate side effects. Over time, after a number of cycles of therapy, the immune side effects, the inflammation, can start showing up. The most common side effect is inflammation of the thyroid gland, ultimately leading to a burnout of the thyroid gland, calling for hormone replacement, which is easy to do. This might happen in about 20% or so of patients. Your doctor likely will check for this in your blood work with each visit. It still is good to know that palpitations, excessive sensation of cold or heat, fatigue, and weight loss or weight gain could be side effects you might notice dependent on whether the thyroid is over or underperforming, and you should report this to your doctor. Less commonly, more serious side effects can also occur, and being counseled, educated about these, and watching out and reporting symptoms is very important, as the earlier these side effects are caught, the more likely they can be effectively and safely managed. While inflammation of pretty much any organ can occur, we usually educate patients about lung inflammation leading to shortness of breath, colon inflammation leading to diarrhea, and different skin rashes as key points to remember. And Drs. Wang and Markova will discuss these in more detail later when it comes to gastrointestinal and skin issues. Other side effects such as liver or kidney inflammation are more likely to be just picked up by routine blood work your doctor will perform. An important word of caution, if you have any baseline immune problems, such as autoimmune disease, for example, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, psoriasis, to name some common ones, you should carefully discuss this with your doctor, as your underlying disease might possibly flare on immunotherapy, and the risk-benefit ratio will need to be more carefully considered. When it comes to common symptoms, such as flu-like symptoms, aches, pains, low-grade fever, sore throat, although we might be mostly over the peak of the triple-demic, flu, COVID, and RSV, but still one, of course, always needs to be certain that the symptoms are not those of an intercurrent infection that would need specific treatment. And in particular, if the treatment of the patient is receiving also involves chemotherapy, we will need to ensure that the blood counts are not too low, in which case a more detailed evaluation might be called for. Otherwise, general supportive care guidelines might be appropriate, oral fluid intake, over-the-counter medicines. But of course, if symptoms do not subside, you will want to report this to your care team in order to be properly evaluated. Again, what patients and patient caregivers will want to know are the more common issues I just listed, and also to remember to report any other concerning new symptom that cannot be easily explained so that your treatment team could triage and manage them. When it comes to treatment of immunotherapy side effects, mostly these will include stopping the immunotherapy and considering medicines that can reduce inflammation, can turn off the immune system that has gone awry, many times in the forms of steroid medicines. However, now we also have new types of medicines called biologics that on occasion can be very useful. Lastly, when the side effects impact a hormone-producing endocrine organ, such as the thyroid, the treatment generally revolves around replacing that hormone through oral medicines, which can be done quite easily. In summary, immunotherapies are transforming the way we treat cancer. We are very fortunate to have such exciting new agents to offer to an expanding number of our patients. With good baseline education, counseling, and then close communication between the patient, patient's caretaker, and the treatment team, we can maximize benefits and optimize outcomes and sustain an excellent quality of life for the majority of our patients. And I think that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Halmos. That was really wonderful, and just a wonderful beginning for the program. You set the stage for the program today, and just very comprehensive and stellar presentation. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Michael Wong. Dr. Wong is Professor of Cutaneous Cancers, Medical Oncology, Executive Director, Integration and Program Development, Cancer Network, University of Texas, MD Anderson Cancer Center. And Dr. Wong will be talking with the healthcare team about treatment side effects and discomfort, recommendations to manage treatment side effects and discomfort, dealing with fatigue, and controlling diarrhea. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Wong.
Thank you very much, Dr. Messner. It is indeed an honor and a pleasure to be able to spend time with you today about immunotherapy and the side effects of immunotherapy. To pick up from comments Dr. Halmos made, Immunotherapy indeed has offered new opportunities for treatment, and more importantly, opens a gateway for potential cure from cancer. Indeed, I'll paraphrase a patient I saw yesterday in clinic for the first time, who, having done his research, said, "You know, I'm very lucky to unfortunately get cancer at the right time." And with promise comes the side effects of this promise, and that's what we want to spend some time talking about. I think Dr. Hamas also mentioned an important a point, which is that all the side effects of immunotherapy come from activation of that person's immune system in a way that fights not just the cancer, but unfortunately spills over and affects their overall general physiology. And he's right, this is a phenomenon called autoimmunity. And one of the things that makes this particularly difficult is that our immune system is individualized. It is a function of what happened as we were formed in our mommy's tummy. It is a function of our exposure to environment. It is a function of multiple events you've had in your life. It is a function of your infections. And we are now finding it is also a function of the intrinsic symbiosis between you and the germs that you harbor in your body, called the microbiome. So it's a very complicated thing. When I teach this to medical students, I start off sometimes by saying, you know, gee, I really miss the good old days with chemotherapy. At least I could time the type of side effects and the timing almost to the hour, right? Unfortunately, with immunotherapy, because of its highly individualized nature, it's not entirely possible to predict the type of immunotherapy side effects you're going to get and the timing. So what is the solution for that? And again, to pick up on a theme that Dr. Helmholtz mentioned, and to really underline it, it is your ability to interact and communicate with your healthcare team. I tell my patients that here are the things I expect to be happening, and anything that that occurs outside our expectations is something that we'd like to hear about, number one. Number two is it is not entirely possible to work backwards from symptoms to diagnosis. So many of the things that can occur in patients can manifest as common symptoms. For example, fatigue is an issue. And I want to spend a little time on fatigue because it's one of the most common things patients speak to me about. When you turn on your body's immune system, you are drawing from your body's energy supply. You are basically turning on your immune system to fight your cancer, similar to how you would turn on your immune system to fight a chronic infection or a chronic inflammation system. Fatigue is common to that. However, it is also the primary symptoms for glandular issues or dysfunctions that can occur with immunotherapy. It can be a primary symptom for some of the inflammatory side effects we can get. So again, the most important thing is a low threshold to communicate this with your healthcare team. And of course, it is incumbent upon the healthcare team to have a permissive environment to allow patients to describe to them, sometimes in vague words, symptoms. So in my personal practice, I always make sure, especially with new patients, I want them to show me the card that my intake nurse gave them. And on that card, I'll point out the ways to get hold of us, all the way from messaging through the online app that we use with our patients. We happen to use MyChart, but there are multiple other ones out there, all the way to calling in and all the way to weekends and nighttime communications. It's important to have that open avenue. Why is that important? Because autoimmune side effects are escalating symptoms. They start low and they escalate more and more and more. So catching it early is important. There are two other symptoms I think bears specific mention. One is diarrhea, and that is a possible manifestation. I say possible because it's not always a possible manifestation, early sign of inflammation of the GI tract. We call that colitis. Not all diarrhea is colitis related, but if you have loose stools, that's a reportable thing to your healthcare team. I always joke with my own mother, you know, how you sent this kid to medical school, and guess what? All we do is talk about poop most of the days. But importantly, it's a sentinel symptom. The second one is shortness of breath and things like that. And that could be a manifestation of what we call pneumonitis, which is inflammation of the lungs. And so decreases in your ability to do simple exercise, like walking upstairs or walking on level ground. Symptoms of shortness of breath are worthy of discussion. Again, you get the sense these are very non-specific symptoms, but important to report back. And so those three things, the fatigue, the colitis, and pneumonitis, are things which are basically very important. There are medications we can use to almost as an antidote to side effects, and your healthcare team can apply them judiciously. But importantly, the first step is communication. So once again, to summarize in the last few seconds, know how to get hold of your medical team at all times. Have a sense of their expectation. Ask questions, right? And make sure you report things that you feel are important. Not what the doctor feels are important, but what you feel are important. The last thing I'm going to say is to make sure that that when you do communicate, when you do have your healthcare team in front of you, to communicate clearly. And sometimes I may even take writing a diary, how much diarrhea did I have, when did the shortness of breath include, just to be a little bit more specific, which is helpful to us. So I'll end with these statements. And again, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and give way to my colleagues, who will provide further wonderful information along these lines. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Wong. That was an excellent presentation, and again, very comprehensive and stellar, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Alina Markova, and Dr. Markova is Director of Inpatient Consultative Dermatology, co-director of Adult and Pediatric Multidisciplinary Graft versus Host Disease Clinics, Assistant Attending Physician Dermatology Service, Assistant Professor of Dermatology, Weill Cornell Medical College, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Dr. Markova will be addressing the importance of reporting treatment side effects and discomfort to the healthcare team, managing rash, dry skin, skin irritation, and care of the skin during immunotherapy treatments, and guidelines to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, and discussion of open notes. It's really my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Markova.
Thank you so much for the time to speak with you all today. I'm eager to provide you all with some tools to be better prepared for potential side effects on the skin, hair, and nails during your immunotherapy treatment. So a large proportion of patients, 70 to 90% of patients on immunotherapy may experience some side effects on the skin, hair, and nails. Most of these are mild and easily managed, and these side effects may appear during the course of your immune therapy or even after the completion of the immune therapy. And if you experience any symptoms, even mild ones, it's so important to notify your care team, whether through the portal, a phone call, and finding out which way your care team would like to be notified when you establish care is really important so you can easily access them. And when you notify your care team, they can implement management as early as possible to reduce these side effects from progressing and also impacting your way of life. Ultimately, our goal as part of your care team is to minimize these side effects to provide you with the best quality of life while you are on treatment and after. One thing that you can really do to enhance your care is especially if you have something on the skin or any symptom. So on the skin, always take a photo. Most of us have smartphones, and if not, someone we know has a smartphone. Take a photo. They're dated, they're timed, so they're really a great clue to the mystery of what's going on. Write down dates in your phones of when symptoms start. Write down when you start new medications. Sometimes when we prescribe a medication to you, the day you start it may be a little bit later due to insurance approvals or other pharmacy delays. So it's really good to have as much documentation of your own medications and experience as possible in your phone or in a notebook of that you can easily reference and bring to your doctor visits. For basic skincare is really important for all patients on immunotherapy. So dry skin is something that many patients experience. We're leaving the winter season, so that's going to be less common, but it's still something that patients experience. So things you can do is you can avoid hot showers. We always recommend washing only the dirty areas, so the hands, feet, underarms, and groin. We recommend using unscented bar soaps and then moisturizing frequently. And we typically recommend using things that are that you scoop, like creams or ointments, multiple times daily. And if you can't tolerate a cream or ointment, we even recommend moisturizing sprays. Sun protection is also key. Some sunburns can trigger rashes in the setting of immune therapy and also may confuse the clinician as to whether this is an immune reaction, immune therapy reaction, or a sun reaction. So we recommend UPF clothing. That's ultraviolet protective factor clothing. These can be purchased at any sports store. They're usually UPF 50 and above. And for areas that you can't cover with UPF clothing, we really recommend sunblocks, 30 SPF 30 and above, and frequent application. Typically, we recommend mineral sunblocks over chemical sunscreens, and that's things that have titanium dioxide or zinc oxide. Titanium is titanium dioxide is dioxide, and zinc oxide. Those are typically less irritating, cause fewer allergies. Another thing to keep in mind as we're entering the summer season is really to use insect repellents, any sort of an insect-proof clothing. Any sort of bug bites can also confuse the picture. Is this an immune therapy reaction or is this just a bug bite? So again, using bug sprays with picaridin or DEET or clothing that's enhanced with permethrin to reduce insect bites can be really helpful and something we do recommend. And so like Dr. Wong mentioned, unlike traditional cancer chemotherapy side effects on the skin to immune therapy can occur at any time during therapy or even months or even after months of therapy and sometimes after discontinuing therapy. And developing these side effects on the skin can actually be associated with improved response to the immunotherapy. Side effects on the skin oftentimes, because they're immune mediated, mimic other diseases that are immune-mediated. For example, eczema, psoriasis, vitiligo, alopecia areata, or lichen planus. There are many ways to address these, and it depends on the type of reaction you are having. We can prescribe creams or other topicals, including sprays and foams. We can sometimes prescribe pills, especially if you have itch. And other times we even may prescribe injections to control the symptoms. And this, of course, depends on the severity and the type of reaction that you're having. We do often prescribe topical steroids, which are typically applied twice daily. If we send you a prescription and it's not covered by insurance or has a high copay, always notify your prescriber so that we can try to send an alternate or connect you with a copay assistance program to reduce your costs. For example, many topical steroids are interchangeable, and each insurance prefers a different one. So we can oftentimes send a different one that's not inferior. It may even be superior, and your insurance may prefer that one. So always reach out. Don't spend a lot of money on a lot of these topicals that we prescribe because they really can be interchangeable. And lastly, I'm going to touch base on the guidelines on how to best prepare for visits. So for video visits, always try to find a quiet place where you're undisturbed, where you can hear and speak clearly. Try to use headphones, ideally ones that are connected to your phone. Ideally you will be in a well-lit room where you can take some notes during your visit. Do not do video visits while you're driving. It's not safe and not effective. And if you are having a video visit where there are skin symptoms, send clear pictures before your televisit. The best way to take clear pictures is to be in a well-lit room with a solid color background without any clutter, and you ideally have someone else take the photos. If you can, selfies are okay, but if you can, it's best to have someone take photos from different positions. And what I mean by that is first take an overview photo that's about 4 feet away to highlight the body part that's involved, and always include the opposite body part. So if the rash is on your right arm, show both arms in the photo from about 4 feet away. Then take a closer photo we can see a bit more of what's going on about 2 feet away. And then the last photo should really be focused in on the actual symptoms on the skin. And if you have a camera phone, tapping the screen in the center can actually focus the camera. So we always recommend doing that. And before you send these photos to your provider, make sure that they're in focus. If the picture is out of focus for you, it's going to be out of focus for us. So send us the best quality photos you can so that we can give you the best quality recommendations. And lastly, before all of your visits, prepare a list of questions. Write down everything you may have so you can get the most out of your visit. And anything we discuss during a visit, you can always reference. Now that all notes are visible after the visit, you can actually log into your patient portal and see the notes from the visit and our recommendations in that plan. So definitely be sure to get access to your patient portal so that you can really access the notes if you need them for additional reminders of our plan. And that's all I have for today. Thank you so much, and I'll pass it on to the next speaker.
Thank you so much, Dr. Markova. That was an outstanding presentation, just a wonderful, wonderful presentation. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Elizabeth O'Donnell, and Dr. O'Donnell is Clinical Director of Early Detection and Prevention of Cancer, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, Assistant Professor of Medicine, Harvard Medical School. And Dr. O'Donnell will be addressing the role of activity, exercise in managing treatment side effects and key questions to ask your healthcare team about quality of life concerns. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. O'Donnell.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for the opportunity to be a part of this discussion of managing the side effects of immunotherapy. My name is Betsy O'Donnell, and I'm a medical oncologist, but I also have a specialty in lifestyle medicine. And as we think about immunotherapy and the effects on people's life, one of the critical questions is how can we improve quality and feel better as we go through therapy? There are actually 6 different pillars of lifestyle medicine that include exercise, nutrition, sleep, relationships, stressors, and substances. And so when we think about the side effects of immunotherapy, some of them are very specific to the drugs that are received and are physical side effects, but some of the other ones go beyond, you know, skin changes into feeling tired or deconditioned, or maybe feeling some of the stress from being in the hospital, from having to go to the hospital, maybe not sleeping as well for a variety of reasons. So today we just want to focus on some things that might help you feel better as you go through this process. Activity is so important. So there may be times where you feel well enough to exercise and can, but there may be other times when you feel tired and unable to get up and, you know, formally exercise. And so one of the key things is really just trying to think about staying active, not letting yourself be sedentary, getting up and moving. And movement can be so many different things. It can be purposeful exercise. It can be going for a walk. But it can also be emptying the dishwasher, preparing a meal, taking the stairs in the house, turning on some music, and dancing around the room. And so one of the critical things is just really trying to stay active so that you maintain your stamina, and that actually helps your fatigue level. It may seem a little bit counterintuitive, but one of the proven measures to improve cancer-related fatigue is actually activity and exercise. So trying to really incorporate that into your life can really help to mitigate some of the side effects of immunotherapies. And quality of life is so important as you go through cancer treatment. The impacts of cancer therapy can be manyfold. They can be emotional. They can affect your work, your relationships. And so I think it's really critical to be open and clear and honest with your care team about the additional stressors in your life. Your doctor, your nurse practitioner, your PA, your entire team cares. And certainly has the capacity to really help you find resources you might need if there are factors affecting your quality of life. but also, you know, can take that in mind when we think about treatment considerations. And so it's really important that both patients and their caregivers bring to the appointments and bring to the relationship with their care team, you know, not only how they're feeling on the treatment, but how that's affecting the overall quality of life. I can tell you as an oncologist, one of the most important things to me is my patient's experience. And, you know, we don't see patients apart from that small amount of time when we're in the office, but most of your life occurs on the outside of the hospital. And so we only have a small window. So the more you share and communicate, the better we are to find you the resources that you might need to improve your quality of life. And so I encourage open communication. I encourage activity, get up, move, and, you know, try and engage with someone around you to partner in activity. It brings more joy to it. And I wish you all wellness, and thank you again for inviting me to participate in this teleconference.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. O'Donnell. That was an outstanding presentation, very, very helpful to our participants, and so thank you. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Diana Bearden, and Ms. Bearden is an oncology dietitian with the Michael E. DeBakey VA Medical Center, and she'll be addressing nutrition and hydration concerns and tips. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Bearden.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. I'm excited to be part of today's presentation. So we've heard a lot today about some potential side effects, and not everybody is going to experience the same side effects, so that's why it's so important that you communicate with your healthcare team. And nutrition and hydration are key, not only to your tolerance to treatment, but also to help provide you the energy to do the things that you enjoy. Some of these side effects that we've heard today are, there are responses we can do with your diet to help with addressing them. So like we've also heard today, is the sooner you can communicate with your healthcare team, the better. We want to help nick these issues as soon as they arise so that you aren't struggling unnecessarily for prolonged periods of time. But each person is unique. And so although we know some of the things that can come up, your experience might be different. And so if there's anything that's new or changing, please communicate with your healthcare team. So a dietitian is part of your healthcare team, and we can help with modifying your diet based on your side effects, adjusting the composition of what you're eating, the frequency of what you're eating. And again, each person's so different. It's really about the unique needs that you're going through. In general, with most patients, we recommend a plant-based diet. It's ideal for prevention, during treatment, and in survivorship. Sometimes, like I said, this might be modified, and patients sometimes get anxious about this. They think, oh gosh, I'm not eating this perfect plan. Am I not doing the best thing for me? And the truth is, we have to modify based on what you're going through, and we can make it work. We can find the best plan that's fitting your unique needs. We talk a lot about nutrition as far as what to eat, and we're looking at your weight, and we're monitoring these side effects, and sometimes we forget about hydration. And dehydration is very common. It can happen throughout your treatment for different reasons. Just sometimes patients' appetite's less than normal, sometimes they're having diarrhea, sometimes they're having nausea, vomiting. But dehydration can actually increase the feeling of some of the symptoms that you're going through. So they can actually make your nausea worse, make you more tired, make you feel dizzy. And so I always like to let patients know that fluid is anything that's liquid at room temperature. Things like water, juice, and sports drinks fit the bill. And so a general guideline is most people need between 8 and 10 8-ounce glasses of fluid a day. Your needs may be higher or lower than that, just based on what you're going through, but that's a general guideline. So if you're experiencing any side effects, you know, with specific foods, keep a little record or make a note so that you can communicate with your healthcare team. That really helps us help you more. Every little detail may not seem like a big deal, but it's funny how it all kind of comes together and it makes sense to us, even though it may not make sense to you. So again, know your healthcare team. I'm going to close with that and pass the line back over to Carolyn.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Burden. That was really outstanding. Just a wonderful presentation and awfully helpful to our participants. So thank you so much. Just very, very useful. And I'm just going to say a few words about cancer care. I'm Dr. Carolyn Mester. I'm Senior Director of Education and Training with Cancer Care. And I'd like to talk about Cancer Care's free programs and services. So many people contact Cancer Care. We're a national organization providing free services. They often call us from the United States on our HOPE line, 1-800-813-4673. And when you call that number, it is answered by an oncology social worker. And usually people call with a very specific request, which our social workers will address, and then they'll go over with them all the services that we provide. So what are those services? So we offer support to people, online support groups. We offer financial assistance and co-payment assistance and practical assistance, as well as resource navigation. We also offer, and that means helping people to get resources if we don't have them and connecting them with those resources. Not just giving you a list of resources to call, but actually connecting you with those resources. And we also offer these workshops. And of course, we do offer publications. And our website, www.cancercare.org, identifies all the different services we offer, both to people in the U.S. and internationally. So please take advantage of looking at our website for all the free services you can access. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A, and I'm going to ask Emma to explain to you how to queue up for questions. Emma?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web and phone. You may submit questions to the web by clicking Ask a Question, and from the phone by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. Thank you.
And we have a whole bunch of questions here that people are putting in already. So this one is for Dr. Hamas. Does your heart get affected later on years, like with chemotherapy, like adriamycin? Can acupuncture and laser therapies and UVA photography help with side effects of immunotherapy, like itching and rashes?
Excellent questions. The second one, I think I will need some help, from Dr. Markovas. I'll pass the baton on that one. But the first one, in terms of heart issues, always very important. Of course, the heart is a critical organ, and we don't take any damage to it lightly. Now, some chemotherapy medicines, but definitely not all chemotherapy medicines, have toxicity, meaning that if you give the same medicine to the patient after a certain dose, there could be significant damage to the heart muscles. That's definitely something that we monitor with ultrasound of the heart, at the start of treatment and as you go on with treatment. Actually, some targeted therapies have the same type of side effect and require monitoring too. Now, immunotherapies, by their kind of principle, nature, do not impact the heart muscle. But just like we said before, they can induce inflammation, they can induce autoimmunity against any organ, and that actually does include the heart muscle as well. And in fact, does include the surface of the heart, the pericardium too. Now, this is rare, but when it happens, it can be very serious. So especially when we use combination immunotherapies for patients, we monitor for it with blood work. There are certain blood tests that we can use. But anyways, we have a very high level of vigilance to pick this up and appropriately treat it if it happens. So there's monitoring and there's treatment if it happens, but I want to reassure you that it's quite uncommon, less than 1% or so.
Excellent. Thank you. And Dr. Markova, do you want to address the other part?
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, absolutely. I can't speak to acupuncture, but I can speak to phototherapy. So that's a great question. We do sometimes use narrowband ultraviolet B phototherapy to treat some eczema or other itch side effects on the skin after they develop. We typically don't use any of this as preventative treatment just because, A, there's no data in that, but B, it also, every treatment has side effects. One of the side effects with phototherapy, it can be a slight increased risk for skin cancer, and the other is just your time phototherapy requires 3 visits to a dermatology office a week, and that time is really valuable, and we hope you can use that more to enjoy your life than be in doctor offices.
Thank you. And another question for you, Dr. Markova. I have glaucoma in addition to being a kidney cancer patient. Am I at higher risk for eye inflammation than people without existing eye conditions?
So that might be better for the eye would be a little bit out of my expertise, but perhaps one of the oncologists can comment on the eye side effects.
Well, Dr. Markova helped me out, so I'm here to help you out.
Thank you.
eye side effects are quite uncommon, you know, with immunotherapy. And again, typically are related to inflammation of different parts of the eye as an organ, which, of course, is a very complicated organ. I do not think that there's any particular relationship with pre-existing glaucoma. So just having glaucoma or other comorbidities doesn't necessarily impact the likelihood of an eye condition to develop, and those are quite uncommon. I use immunotherapy in many patients, and maybe once a year or so we face a patient with immunotherapy side effects impacting the eye.
Dr. Wong here, I second the motion. So I'm unaware of any connection specifically pertaining to this question.
Excellent. Thank you. And a question for Dr. Wong. I've lost a lot of weight relatively quickly. Can you suggest a supplement I could take to help reduce the weight loss?
Well, this is unfortunately also a very common issue, and I would sort of look for Ms. Bearden to weigh in on this as well. But bottom line is there are multiple factors that can weigh in on this. I talked about inflammation of colon that can be a contributing factor, and endocrine issues can be a contributing factor. The general fatigue that people have can be a contributing factor. And in general, I tell my patients it's hard to build muscle and strength while you're on immunotherapy. Your metabolism is turned on fully in the fight against cancer. Those are general statements, and I'll cede the stage to Ms. Bearden if she has any comments.
I think she's up, but I think she would actually suggest that you see a dietitian. That would be a very good idea, and work with the healthcare team around this. A lot of the amount of weight loss that you're describing, a lot of weight loss, mentioned to your oncologist, and also the dietitian on your oncology team. That would be a very good idea.
Absolutely. The dietitians are part and parcel of our team, and we pull them in specifically for cases like the one that we are speaking about now.
And then another question, and this would be for, I'll start with Dr. Halmos. Is it recommended to take any medications to help reduce the intensity of side effects, or could doing this potentially unfavorably interact with the immunotherapy treatment?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, of course. Again, just stepping back to chemotherapy, anytime we start a patient on chemotherapy, we start to think about some preventative side effects, for nausea, vomiting, things of that nature. Sometimes we need to take extra vitamins to prevent certain side effects. That's generally not the case with immunotherapy. So typically, we do not need to co-administer any medicines to prevent side effects or treat side effects in the first couple of cycles of treatment. That being said, rarely, there's patients coming into treatment with certain immune conditions, but maybe we might be concerned about the flare of that condition. And as a result, sometimes we decide to use a very low dose of steroid medicines to try to come up with the best risk-benefit ratio. That's an uncommon decision and also a difficult one. So again, the general recommendation not to use any medication alongside unless very specific side effects do develop.
And Dr. Messner, can I pipe in for 1 second?
Agree
wholeheartedly with Dr. Halmos's comments. However, I want to mention something we did not speak about very much today, which is clinical trials. And I want to impress upon folks this is a very active area of investigations. There are multiple clinical trials ongoing, to try to really solve the answer the question that the participant posed. So it's sort of a little bit outside our scope today, but if you are approached in a context of a clinical trial, this is one of the questions that many ongoing trials are trying to answer.
Excellent. Oh, thank you so much. Thanks. I'm going to read this very specific, but may apply to other people as well, and I'll start with Dr. Halmus. I'm 7 months out of almost 2 years of treatment for stage 3 MLH1 positive HPV negative MSI high DMMR anal cancer. Initially experienced skin lesions, now identified as lichen dermatitis. Treatment with pembrolizumab was started at the onset of microscopic colitis. I'm still experiencing this, initially treated with prednisone, tapered off, and being treated by a GI nurse practitioner who is just throwing fiber supplements at me. If I take less than 6 teaspoons of Metamucil per day, diarrhea resumes. I am fatigued and hair has started falling out. It doesn't seem as if food is digesting very much. And this is a very long question. I don't know, Dr. Thomas, if you can make this into a smaller question and address it,
sure.
So it might help other people as well. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Sure, certainly, and I love it that we have a team approach here. So Dr. Marco and Dr. Wang, feel free to chime in. You know, number one, of course, when we pick immunotherapy for certain patients, I just want to highlight that many times we need to pursue what's called biomarker testing, and we heard those terms, MSI high, HPV, et cetera. So every oncologist, every clinician taking care of patients with a cancer diagnosis now has to do a detailed job to make sure that we pick the optimal path, not just the first path, as to picking the right treatment. So I'm very glad to learn that in this particular case, that type of testing was done, immunotherapy was provided. It sounds like with excellent success. And nowadays, another key question is how long to continue immunotherapy. And sometimes we continue just for a certain amount of time, and then we stop. And it does appear that in some patients, but not all patients, the cancer can respond so well that treatment might just not need to be restarted. So those are just two key issues that I wanted to mention, you know, reflecting on this case. Now, we also heard that sometimes immune side effects of immunotherapy can happen even after the immunotherapy is stopped. These medicines actually hang around in the body for quite some time, and they could also just initiate an immune process that, you know, afterwards just kind of runs its own course. So it might not be very, very surprising to have potentially longer-term side effects of the immunotherapy. But of course, we all could, you know, have illnesses unrelated to it. So I can't really comment on that very specific aspect. But this is where we oncologists really need to work with subspecialists, such as excellent dermatologists, excellent other subspecialists, managing side effects of these conditions.
Excellent. And Dr. Markova, do you want to? Oh, yeah,
just to build on that, yeah, very quickly. I think Dr. Halmus mentioned the important word, which is team approach, and we frequently call in our GI colleagues, for instance, to help manage some of these GI effects that we're seeing, and they may do a variety of tests, both on stool, on blood, and maybe even things like colonoscopy and endoscopy to help figure things out. So I'll end there, but the important thing is this is obviously not your standard situation, and as the patient's issues escalate, we will likewise escalate in our sort of aggressiveness to approach by bringing in other folks.
And Dr. Markova, did you want to add something as well?
Yes, as far as the lichenoid rash, that is a common rash that we can see. It can be a little bit more challenging to treat if topical steroids don't control it. The rash itself, patients can get some purplish, scaly areas on their body. The rash itself is not dangerous. However, it can be symptomatic. And so our level of treatment really depends on how symptomatic it is to the patient. And again, with many things, we do start with topical steroids. And if that's inadequate, then we start to try other treatments. There are some pill treatments that are derivatives of vitamin A. There are also other off-label treatments that we can prescribe, but really these should be prescribed in the setting of an academic dermatologist, dermatology practice. So if you are or any patient is having any persistent rash, we really recommend getting in with a dermatology physician and being evaluated for potential treatments. And there are many that may help. So definitely if any patient is having persistent symptoms, we strongly encourage a dermatology visit.
And a question, I'll give this to Dr. Wong to start, and you may, the team approach, others may want to weigh in on it. My treatment has drastically affected my sense of taste to the point where most foods have a metallic aftertaste. Is there anything I can do to help with this?
Right. So, again, one of these complex issues which can involve things within the upper digestive tract, salivary glands, sensory neural pathways, endocrinopathies. So again, a multifactorial approach. And what we tend to do is try to isolate down which of the paths these include. And then at that point, you might bring in folks from rheumatology to help manage some of these things, or up a head and neck otolaryngology folks, even maybe dentists to help, because maybe an issue with dentition and oral things, and so we try to keep things general because of the fact that there are multiple pathways that can flow from this one symptom, and therefore the first step, bring it to your healthcare provider's attention. Step number two, to impress upon them the symptomatic impact on you as an individual, to impress upon them the importance of this. Sometimes what I do with patients is I say, you've come to me with a long list of things, but which of these is the most important? And the reason for that is because each of these can have ancillary side effects to the side effects, which then can make things complicated. But usually the dominant ones are the one you chase down. So again, it's a very general answer, but it should impress upon you the importance of communication, of prioritization, and of your healthcare team to sort of sort through this and find the appropriate pathway to go down and to bring in the members of the team that are going to be helpful to you.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'd like to agree with that entirely, and also just suggest an exam of the mouth, even seeing a dermatologist, a dentist, or a head and neck doctor, and maybe all three, to evaluate for any active inflammation in the mouth that can be contributing and causing the taste changes. And sometimes those lichenoid rashes that we mentioned before can affect the mouth also, and sometimes they're overgrowth of the skin in the mouth that can also affect the taste. And other things that can affect the taste are nutritional deficiencies, so vitamin deficiencies. So for most patients with abnormal taste, we actually also recommend seeing a nutritionist, both for ensuring that the patient is receiving adequate nutrition, but also to provide better quality of life with those taste changes. They can certainly give some recommendations that can improve your quality of life. So definitely recommend notifying your team and getting in to see the appropriate specialist.
Excellent. Wow. This is really, that really has been a whole team approach today, I have to say, outstanding. And I'm going to ask for takeaways from Dr. Halmos, Dr. Wong, and Dr. Markober from today's program, starting with Dr. Halmos. Just a quick takeaway of what you people take away from today's program.
Yeah, I think what you could hear is communication and team approach. You need to have like a quarterback on the team, and that might be the medical oncologist. But that oncologist likely will rely on you and your caretaker to provide him or her with communication as to issues that you might face, and might have a full team in the background to make sure that they can take the best care of you as you're undergoing treatment and suffering side effects, hopefully mild and hopefully very manageable.
Oh, thank you so much. That's excellent, Dr. Halmos. And Dr. Wong?
Just to add to these excellent comments already, the theme I want to leave you with is one of empowerment, to make sure that you feel empowered to bring to your healthcare team the exact symptoms that you're going through, and provide them also any help that they may need, including diaries of the side effects. Let's use stool for an example. How many times you're going, if you have loose stools, what's the consistency? The details begin to matter. But I empower you to go and reach out to a healthcare team to impress upon them the important things that are happening to you.
Excellent. Thank you. And Dr. Markova?
Absolutely. Number one, take a picture. If it's on the skin, take a picture. Let us know. And you don't have to suffer with the side effects. So definitely let us know so we can help you. That's the number one priority. We want you to have a good quality of life while you're on treatment with immunotherapy, because that's the overall goal.
Oh, thank you. I want to thank our speakers. You've really been phenomenal. I want to thank our participants also, who actually asked such great questions. Although we've done this program before, I have to say that today's program was by far the most sophisticated questions we've had and the most fantastic team we've ever assembled working together. So I think that team approach is so important, and you're hearing that from all of the speakers. Now, I realize that our program is soon to conclude, and I wanted to remind all of you that this is a one-hour program, and that in doing this one-hour program, we obviously can't get to everyone's question. And even if we got to your question, I would suggest that everybody, what you've learned from today's program, please take it back to your treating healthcare team. Ask your question of them, because, of course, they know you the best. And keep asking your questions and telling them what's going on with you so that you can get the best team approach to handling any of the symptoms or side effects that you have. So be persistent with that. That's really important. Also, Dr. Wong, I think, mentioned the issue of weekends, evenings, holidays. Be sure that you have access to your team weekends, evenings, and weekends. It seems to be when things kind of come up for people a lot. So during the day, you can often reach somebody, but these other times, you need to know who is the person that you can contact for help. Also, as we conclude, I would not want anyone to feel alone in coping with cancer or coping with the immunotherapy side effects. I want you to now know that you're part of a community of support, your healthcare team being the very first place you go to, and keep going to them. And you also, of course, can contact Cancer Care as well. At the end of today's program, actually in a couple of days, you'll be receiving a Survey Monkey from us, and that's an evaluation of the program. But in addition to that, we will include any kind of links or websites or 800 numbers that we provided, or if we didn't provide it during the program, we may think of others you want to add to it so that you can feel like you have a range of people to call. But remember, your healthcare team truly is the first place to go to. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.